Okay, this is the pre-bid conference for Project DA00338, which is the renovation of ornamental plantings here in Perquimans County on US 17 at Windfall. I'm Pat Mansfield, roadside environmental engineer. With me, I've got Doug Mazzell and Dennis Robertson from my office, and I'd like to welcome both of you vendors here today. We're going to go through the project. I am not going to read this thing word for word. I expect that you guys will, and that you'll understand all the terminology in the contract. If you have any questions after today, any questions whatsoever about this project, you will have to call Barry Hobbs in our Edenton Division office, and his number is 482-1862. That's Barry Hobbs, and he will answer any questions after today's pre-bid. There is a bid bond required on this project, 5%. If you want to follow along, let's go to page 4, instructions to bidders. Please make sure you follow all the instructions to bidders on this page. Make sure you've got your, if your corporation, you've got your stamp, and that Notary Public has signed your bid offer as well. On number 10, the proposal with the itemized proposal sheet attached shall be placed in a sealed envelope and delivered to the division office, not to this office, but to our division office, which is located at 113 Airport Drive, Suite 100, Edenton, better known as the old airport building there in Edenton. And make sure that you have it there by 2 p.m. on Wednesday, June the 7th. It should be in a sealed bid with that quotation and number 11 on the outside of the envelope. If you choose to mail it, then you should mail it to the address there in item number 12, and make sure you have a outer mailing envelope, and inside is your sealed bid with the quotation on number 11. Because the mail is opened every day, if they open it and it's not in a sealed envelope inside of the mailing envelope, then your bid would not be considered for award because it would have been opened improperly. You also have the option of preparing and submitting your bid by computer, and the instructions are there in optional computer bid preparation. And that continues on page 5 for electronic bidding for division contracts. If you have any questions about that whatsoever, again, please call Barry Hobbs, and he will answer your questions. On page 6, this is a mandatory pre-bid conference. Only those two bidders who are present, and that is Platinum Logistics and Brown's Landscaping, will be allowed to bid on this project. As far as bond requirements, contract payment and performance bonds are required for this project. Contract time and liquidated damages, and I'm sorry, I'm on page 7. The date of availability is August 1st, and the completion date for this contract is going to be July 31st of 2020. So there's a three-year warranty work that goes along with this project. The intermediate contract time, where you're actually going to do the work of the initial renovation and trimming and so forth and mulching, is going to be August 1st, 2017 to September 15th, 2017. That's a good 6 weeks. Based on what we've seen in the past of this type work, most contractors can get it completely done within 1 week, if not shorter than that. So we will expect you to get it done within the 6 weeks that are allowed. Otherwise, there will be a $500 per calendar day liquidated damage assessed for each day beyond September 15th. Intermediate contract time number 2 is talking about the warranty work that's done monthly. Your availability date on that is the first day of each month, and the last date, the completion date, is the last day of each month. So if you don't get your warranty work done within that calendar month, then it's, again, a $500 per calendar day beyond that. So February 28th is the last day of February. If you don't do your work until March 1st, then on March 1st, you just lost $500. Okay. And on page 8, intermediate contract time number 3, this is for holidays and other weekend lane closure time restrictions. Please make sure that you're aware of those, especially if a holiday falls at the end of a month and you use that as an excuse of why you didn't get your warranty work done. That's not going to fly. You got plenty of time to get it done, and you know ahead of time when these restrictions are to take place. Number 9, prosecution of work. We do expect you to get started and stay on the job until you're finished. We don't want you to come on Tuesday, not show up again till the following Thursday, not show up again till the following Wednesday. We want you to show up, get the work done, and get out. If you do leave the project without letting us know what's going on in writing, there is a $250 per day, each and every calendar day, penalty for doing that. Under disadvantaged business enterprise, if you'll go over to, on page 11, DBE goal for this project is 0%, which means you're not required to hire a disadvantaged business enterprise for the course of this work. However, if you do, that's great, and we, in the beginning, we'd like for you to fill out the form at the back indicating whether you are or you don't, or you're not going to use DBE participation. But regardless, and we'll look at that form in a few minutes, but regardless of whether you do, if you don't plan to use them and your answer is you're going to do zero, then you need to make sure the form is filled out so that it shows that. Don't leave that form blank, because it will make your bid an unresponsive bid, and we cannot accept your bid if that form is left blank. On page 21, I'd like to point out certification for federal aid contracts. One of the things that we require, because this project has federal funds in it, is a certified payroll. You must submit a certified payroll before we can issue any payment to you for that particular month. We typically accept an invoice once a month, and we'll work with you, the successful bidder, to determine at what benchmark each month you'd like to get paid. It is not required that you submit an invoice, but it does help us check our records against yours, but it's not necessary for you to submit an invoice. Chris Stanton, who was in here a few minutes ago, he will be the inspector on this project, and he's going to inspect you every day. So, like when you're trimming the trees, he's going to mark down every day how many you trimmed. He's going to mark down how much mulch you brought to the job. It's going to be all in his records. And then we will do our payment to you based on Chris's records. If you send us an invoice, we'll check it against Chris's records to make sure we haven't missed something. Okay? Please make sure that you make yourself aware of the items on page 24, the Iran Divestment Act, as well as gifts from vendors and contractors. On page 25, liability insurance, you will have to carry it. during the entire project. And if you'll go to the standard specifications, you can see the amounts that are required. And just let me point out that in addition to this contract document that you have here in front of you, our standard specifications for roads and structures, 2012 edition, is also made part of this contract. So any provisions that are in that document are part of this. You can see the whole thing online. I'm assuming you can probably order a book if you want to, but you can see every bit of it online. As far as subletting of contract, you may sublet, but in doing so, you must meet certain percentage. There's a certain percentage that you cannot go below in subletting. Plus, any subcontractor that you may want to use has to be approved by us, and they have to be in our system before we can let you use them. They cannot come on the job until they have been pre-qualified in our system. All right, any questions so far? These are standard provisions. Please make sure you read all of them so that you're aware of the conditions of this contract. All right, on page 26, these are our special provisions for the project, and this covers this provision covers the work of renovation of existing shrub and tree planting areas, including but not limited to the selective removal and disposal of all undesirable vegetation and pruning crepe myrtle trees in the designated sections as directed by the engineer and subsequent warranty work. Under vegetation renovation, for all juniper shrubs and any non-desirable trees with a diameter of greater than 3 inches at ground level, selectively remove vegetation by cutting those trunks at or less than 3 inches above the existing ground level, and do not pull the stumps out. And the reason for that is we've got shrubbery interplanted with crepe myrtle trees. The shrubbery is going to be taken out. The crepe myrtle trees are going to remain. If you try to grub out the roots of those shrubs, you're going to mess up the crepe myrtle trees. So what we're allowing you to do is cut them off at ground level, as close as you can get it, but no higher than 3 inches from ground level. Okay? And then as soon as you cut those stumps, treat it with a cut stump herbicidal treatment so that it kills the plant that's remaining, and we don't have any problems with it trying to come up after it's been cut. The junipers, I don't think you'll have any problem with them trying to resprout. But there are some other junk trees that have come up in some of these beds. There's not a whole lot of it, but there is some that's got 3 inches or better, and those might would try to come back. So we want to make sure that they get treated with a herbicidal treatment immediately after they've been cut off. And I would ask that you please put some dye into your solution so we can see it on the stump. Make sure that we know that each stump has been treated with the evidence of the dye. And this cut stump herbicidal treatment is considered incidental to selective vegetation removal. Then grub out all other non-desirable vegetation and fill any voids from grubbing with topsoil. And while you're doing this cutting and moving, especially if you're using equipment, make sure that you don't damage the plants that are meant to stay behind, the crepe myrtle trees. If you're going to reach in there with something and pick up the vegetation after it's been cut, that's fine. Just make sure that your boom does not mess up the branches of the crepe myrtles that are above it. Okay? Now, for... we'll go past that. There are 6 locations. The first one being at Swingate Road. The second one being DOT Maintenance Yard. The third and fourth being the Big Field. The fifth, Albemarle EMC. And the sixth is the bridge. These are nicknames we've given to each site so that when we call you and say, hey, The big field beds, they look bad. They need some work. You'll know what we're talking about. We know what you're talking about when you converse with us. In the pictures, in the text, section 1, Swingate Road, you can see the crepe myrtle trees in the median there, and you can see what the mowing limits are going to be around those crepe myrtle trees. The next one, number 2, the DOT yard, that's right out straight in front of us. Again, it shows what the mowing limits are going to be. 3 and 4, and the only reason we said 3 and 4 is there's a little cut across that the farmers go from one field to the other, and so there's a split in that bed. So 3 and 4, they're mowed continuously from one end to the other. And that's the longest bed. Okay, and then the next one, number 5 at Albemarle EMC. And then the last one, the little short one at the bridge. And they're all located right in front of us, from down there at Swingate Road to the bridge. So within about a mile and a half is where everything is located. All right, number 32, topsoil. Just to let you know, we will have to test your topsoil. This is a federal project, so we have to formally test your topsoil. Dennis will take care of that for us, so you'll need to provide us the source where it's coming from so we can go to the source and test it. And we're going to be looking for pH and also, we're just looking for pH, and then he's also going to look at whether it's got a lot of sticks, gravel, rocks, roots, trash, and that sort of thing in it. Pruning and shaping trees. These crepe myrtles have got a lot of chunks coming up in them. We want you to reduce it to 3 to 7, somewhere in that range, 3 to 7. We want you to prune out any crossing branches or any branches that are rubbing together. Remove any dead wood and take away all suckers from the bottom. What we're looking for is basically to limb these things up, thin them out a little bit, and make them look better. And we need for you to prune those in accordance with the International Society of Arboriculture pruning techniques, and you can go and look online and find diagrams of that. Conduct your pruning in a manner so that you limb in a manner to prevent limb, bark, or root injuries to the trees that are supposed to remain. Now, in the bed, I think it's 3 and 4. That's probably where the worst of the trees are. In particular, right where the 3 and 4 meet. In the 3, there's been some trees there that over the years have been run over by cars, or vehicles, rather. And so they were broke off, but they've resprouted. And those are the ones that really need some shaping to get them back to a good shape. Plus, they've come up all in the bed. You know, it's not like they're just in one spot. So we need for you to measure from here to here and get in the middle and find one that's right in the middle, prune it out so that it's going to grow up and eliminate all the rest of them. Under weed control, during initial renovation and before you mulch, we want you to successfully treat the bed areas to get rid of all weeds. On August 1st, stuff is growing and pretty. You ought to be able to get in there with some non-selective herbicide and take out most of the unwanted vegetation that's growing down on the ground. Once you get the junipers out, you can really get to it then. But we want you to spray that out so that it doesn't come back. Within 30 days of placing mulch, whether it's mulch for planting or mulch after planting, you shall apply a pre-emergent herbicide to all newly mulched areas within 30 days of placing the mulch. If you do use non-selective herbicides after the plants have been cleaned up and everything, you need to make sure that whoever's applying the herbicide is very careful not to get any on the plants that are to remain, because any misapplication of herbicide that damages the remaining plant material will have to be replaced. The plant material will have to be replaced at your cost, and we will not participate in the cost of that replacement. The crepe myrtles that are out there right now are Natchez, or at least they were supposed to be Natchez. It is questionable, but that's what they're supposed to be. Yes.
On the pre-emergence,
mm-hmm.
You saved yourself a lot of time and money. Liquid's cheaper, but what I've seen so far is a generic snapshot. It's like $82 a bag. You put that out, it's a granular. When you had to go do your monthly thing, you'll probably have very few weeds. It works. It's working better than the just a liquid. I know most of you guys are probably using something like pendimethalin or something. And to get the two, you got to mix three different chemicals to get what you get out of the other.
Snapshot.
Just letting you know.
Okay. We do have a herbicide chart here, but just understand you're not required to use everything that's in here or any of what's in here. But if you do choose to use something different from what's in here, you will have to provide to us enough notice so that we can, you have to tell us what you want to use, and then we've got to check it out and make sure it's approved for use on the right-of-way. And if it's not, then you can't use it. We've had contractors in the past that either had ties to farming or they were farmers or whatever, and they wanted to use something that they used in the crops. And it might have had the same formulation as another product that was approved for use on the right-of-way, but this one over here, approved for crops, is cheaper, so they want to use that one. You can't do that. You have to follow the law, and the law says you can only use a product that is approved for use on the right-of-way. So please be careful when you're looking at that. Also, understand that any time pesticides are being applied, we, DOT, requires that you have your pesticide license holder on site. They don't have to be the ones that are applying the herbicide, but they have to be the ones that they have to be on site when it's being applied. And that is above and beyond the requirements of the pesticide law. That is a DOT thing, and we will strictly monitor that. Mulch for planting. We want you to mulch over the crepe myrtle tree plant bed areas to a finished depth of 3 inches. And then make sure everything is raked down to a nice uniform finish. And the mulch is to be in a swath that's 15 feet wide with the crepe myrtles in the middle, right in the center, and then go 10 feet beyond the last crepe myrtle tree in each bed section. So that's the size, and each group varies a little bit. Mulch after planting. Every time you remulch, you're going to remulch between March 1st and April 30th of 2018 and 19. And then we're probably going to have you to mulch again right at the tail end of the contract just to give it a fresh layer right before we turn it back over to the town windfall. But each time, you're going to apply fresh mulch over existing mulch. And we want you to bring it back to that 3-inch level. So if we've had a year and your mulch has stayed and it's pretty good, you might just put a thin layer on top. But if it's about gone, we'll put whatever it takes to bring it back to 3 inches. Monthly warranty work begins after the initial renovation has been completed and accepted. So let's say you go in on August 1st and you knock this thing out, and by the 5th you're done and gone. Okay? Then we're going to start warranty work in September. And then we'll go for 36 months starting with September. Let's say you don't finish until, you don't come in there until September 14th and you knock it out on the 14th and the 15th and you're done. Then we're going to start warranty work on October 1st. So then you're like a month beyond going in that direction. All right, under compensation, for the selective vegetation removal, that's a lump sum payment. So It's just lump sum for all the bushes and stuff and other stuff that you've got to take out. Topsoil's going to be paid for at the cubic yard price. Pruning and shaping of trees will be each. So when you're done, however many trees you've had to prune and shape, we will pay you for each tree that you did. Mulch for planting, that's by the cubic yard. And monthly warranty work is paid per each. So, you know, if you want $25 a month to come and take care of these plants for me, I'll be grinning all the time, but I don't think I'll get it that cheap. But whatever you want each month is what you put down on that that line item. All right, the next section talks about borrow excavation, and it's a truck measurement. Under materials, there's a lot of information in that section that doesn't necessarily apply to this project, but there are some pieces that do. Obviously, we don't have any concrete work on this project, but there are other items that would apply. So we move on through, and then we get to the traffic control and work zone safety. You will have to set up traffic control for this project, and because you're going to be so close to the lane of traffic, while you are working on the initial cleanup of these beds, we want you to work from one side of the road at a time. You're going to have an attenuator. You schedule with us, and we will bring the attenuator out there. Everything else you have to supply, cones, whatever else has to go out there, you have to supply, but we will supply you with the attenuator. But don't call us at 7 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, I need it today. You need to call us in advance so that we can get it scheduled, because we may just say, sorry, buddy, and then don't come to me afterwards and say, well, you wouldn't come when I wanted you, and now I'm beyond. Nope, I'm telling you, forewarned right now, schedule in advance. We'll make it happen for you. If you don't schedule in advance, it may not happen.
Do we have to, like Tony, me, or one of us got to go up and set that work zone up for them?
No.
With the taper?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so they should know how many cones they got to have and what the taper got.
Don't mind helping you figure it out.
Do we have to be certified safety?
You know what? I'm not sure if that's in this requirement. It very well may be.
I think we have to ask that question.
Mm-hmm. I haven't looked to see if it requires a certified person. I don't see that it does, but we can look at it closer, and you be sure you look at it closer as well. Dennis, can you look through it while we move on and see if there's any requirement for a certified traffic control person? And I will say this, if there is that requirement and you don't have someone on staff to meet that requirement, there are people who will subcontract their services to you for that. All right, on page 50, division-let contract pre-qualification. Any firm that wishes to bid as a prime contractor shall be pre-qualified as a bidder or a PO prime contractor prior to submitting a bid. You have to be pre-certified, pre-qualified. If you're not, when the bids come in, we will not open your bid. Okay? So if you're not currently pre-qualified, it is a process you have to go through. I have seen people get pre-qualified relatively quickly, but if you're not pre-qualified today, you need to call somebody today and get them to help you get that done. The information of who to contact is listed there as a web page address. From that page, you can get some phone numbers and you can get some forms to find out what you got to do to be pre-qualified. Under safety vest, let me just point out that every person, even the owner of the company, the supervisor, it doesn't matter. If you're on the job and you're on the ground, you must have on a safety vest that meets the OSHA-approved reflective outer garment, vest or outer garment, at all times while you're on the project. And we can probably move right on through at this point. You'll find the title, what is it, Title II requirements, and also the federal requirements that come next. And the federal requirements, of course, talk about your on-the-job training, talks about your certified payroll, and let me just point out that there are minimum amounts that you will have to pay to your workers while they're on this project. And those minimum payments can be found on pages 72 and 73. So based on what you see here, you can see truck drivers and that sort of thing. Truck drivers and general labor you'll find. But anyway, those are the amounts that you have to pay to these people while they're on this job. I don't care how much you pay your people any other time, but while they're on this job, they must be making this amount of money. And we will do, during the course of the installation and during the maintenance part, we will conduct random surveys with your employees and ask them how much are they getting paid. And then we record that. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes your folks tell us that they're making less than what they're supposed to be making while they're on this project. So that may be a misunderstanding, I don't know, but if your person tells us they're making $9.25 and they're supposed to be making $10.32, then that's a red flag for us, and we're going to ask you about it, and you're going to have to show us more than just your certified payroll at that point to prove that you are paying them what they're supposed to. On page 76, this is where you list your DBE subcontractors. Again, if you're not going to be using any, then make sure that the dollar volume of DBE subcontractor is zero and the percentage of total contract bid price is zero. If you are using DBE contractors, you need to list their name, their address, circle where they're an MBE, which is a minority business enterprise, or a WBE, which stands for Women Business Enterprise. What item number? The item number is on the bid page. You can see 1 through 8 on the bid page for your item number. So you list what item number they're going to be doing for you and the description, and then the agreed upon unit price, and then the total dollar volume of that item. Then down here at the bottom, the total dollar value is added up, and then you figure out what percentage of your overall contract price that represents. Okay, on the bid proposal, again, these are individual line items. Under unit cost, if it says LS, that means that's a lump sum, and you don't put in a unit cost for that. It's just the total amount on that one. But on things like generic planting item, let's see, line item number 3, generic planting item, monthly warranty work, there's 36 and it's each. So under unit cost, you want to put down there how much you're charging us each time. And then you go multiply that unit cost times the quantity and put that under amount of how much it totals up to. Bear in mind that the unit price that you put down, the unit cost, we will calculate each one of those line items. And if you've made an error, we will correct your error on the total amount. The unit price always governs. We have had people turn in bids that the only thing they put was a total amount. That is an irresponsible bidder. We can't accept that. We have to see those unit costs. But again, on LS means lump sum, so there's no unit cost there. It's just a total. All right, so for planting, we've allowed for 500 cubic yards of mulch. We've also allowed for 500 cubic yards of mulch in the mulch after planting. We've allowed for 75 trees that you will prune and shape. Generic planting item of selection vegetation removal is lump sum. And then topsoil we've allowed for 20 cubic yards. We don't expect you'll even use close to that, but it's in there if you need it. And let me also say there are no major lines in this contract or items in this contract. So any one of these line items, if we need to overrun them, we can. For instance, mulch after planting. That's one we may overrun. If we need extra mulch at the end, we'll put extra mulch at the end. And we'd still do it at the same unit cost. We'll just overrun that amount. Any questions about the special provisions, the federal requirements, or the Title I requirements, any of that?
On the, and I'm pretty sure this is all in traffic control manual. We set up traffic control. Is there a minimum? Because I'm assuming we're going to do a lane closure on the side we're working on.
Yes.
The big bed, we take off half of it. We're going to do the whole bed. Is there a minimum length of...
Is there a minimum length for the work zone? That's what you're asking?
Yes, ma'am.
Actually, no. There isn't a minimum length. However, just bear in mind that once you move traffic over to the other side, if on the bigger bed, I would go ahead and cone off the whole thing just because you're working in there.
Right.
And for your safety, you don't want to let the traffic come right back in you just want to cone off as much as you can for your work zone to keep traffic out of it.
It gives you an area.
Yeah.
Can you mismatch drums and skinny drums, or do you have to use all at once?
Yeah, once you set up, you can mix match skinny drums and big drums, but in your taper,
they have to be the same.
Yeah, you need to know. You have to take what the speed limit is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And do the math. That tells you how long that area has to be.
And there is a lump sum line item in your contract for traffic control. So if there is something you don't have, and we've told you ahead of time, you're responsible for all this stuff,
right,
whereas your signs, your racks, your cones, and you're going to have them for this project, that's where you get it paid for. We don't expect you to do this for recreation. We expect you to...
That's a big item.
It is. It can, and that's why it's always in the contracts now as a lump sum. We recognize that it is a big item for you. It's an expense we require you to have it, so we will pay for it.
How many skinny drums is on a typical table? 50?
You're on a 55-mile-an-hour section? No, it's not 50.
I've been through this two ways. I see nothing on where you have to be work zone supervisor. Or
okay.
I know in Virginia, they'll make you do that and bring in somebody that's actually certified to traffic control. So I didn't know if you all had the same thing.
We in some of our projects, we have had it. If it's a big project, generally, we've required that, and I think all of the road work projects require it.
If you've got somebody that you typically use, I mean, that's entirely up to you, but it's not a requirement for the job.
All right.
How about tipping fees, the debris that we take out, what's the...
That's yours. That's part of your selected vegetation removal lump sum price, yep.
Okay. So you can pile it up on it right away and burn it?
No. You cannot dispose of it. You have to dispose of it according to the law, what the law requires it.
So we got a site where we're dumping on. That's our business, like a piece of land that we have for ourselves. Or do you want to see a receipt?
If your site has been inspected and approved as a place where you can dump material on, it's not just a place in your backyard where you're dumping things, then we can we can work with that. Otherwise, you just better off take it to the landfill and pay the tipping fees. And most of what you're going to remove is going to be the top part of the plant. It's not like you're going to be removing a whole bunch of roots here because you're cutting them off at the ground. But there's a lot of plant material out there that you're removing. So you need to be smart, sharpen your pencil, and figure out what you think it's going to cost in tipping fees to take that material somewhere.
The freight's going to be more than tipping fees.
Well, and you've got a mobilization line item here, too. I'm not telling you how to bid. You guys put your money where you need to put your money. But, you know, selective vegetation removal encompasses all of that. Okay. Any other questions at this point?
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me just say those are guidelines. You have to look through it, and every scenario is not going to be in that book. It's a guideline to help you figure out how to set up your particular work zone.
But it'll tell you for a speed limit, how long the buffer's got to be, how long your taper's got to be.
Okay.
It's a good guide.
And it just, if you're used to doing work in Virginia, North Carolina, you can no longer use cones in your taper. They have to be
for a battle.
Skinny drums.
Yeah, so this is it certain times you can work, like in Virginia, certain times you got to be off the road or lane closure or anything like that.
30 minutes before sunset.
Yeah, the liquidate, the ICT number 3 list those times, like he just said, 30 minutes before sunset, 30 minutes after sunrise. And then on certain days of the week, you have to stop at noon, and you can't. Yeah, I haven't looked at that one to see if it on Friday at noon you have to stop. But on Highway 17, it'd be advisable that you don't even work on Friday if you don't have to. But at least, it's a difference.
In Carolina, can you work on Sundays? They don't allow you to work on Sundays.
No, we work Monday through Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Fortunately not.
Okay. If you'll note on the back side of the your bid form, page 1, on the back side of that is addendums number 1, 2, and 3. So far, there's been no addendums that we've seen that were needed here today, but addendums are posted online just like the contract was. So if there is an addendum, it will be posted online. And if you'll give us your email address, yours is on there. Lyle, if we get you to put your email address on the form. If there is an addendum, a notice will be emailed to you that the addendum is up, and sometimes they'll even include it with the email. But it is still your responsibility to look online for any addendums. And then if there is an addendum 1, you sign it as acknowledging addendum 1, 2, or 3, if there are any. Okay, the next few pages are your execution of bid. There are several pages here. Depending on your business will depend on which one of these you need to choose. If you're a corporation, the very first one is the one that you use. And again, remember, your corporate seal as well as a notary seal has to be on that one. If you're a partnership, if you're a limited liability company, if you're a joint venture or an individual doing business under a firm name, whichever one of these execution of bid documents fits your particular business is the one you need to fill out, okay? The rest of them, you just leave them blank. Under debarment certification, if you have ever been debarred from doing work in North Carolina for DOT, you'll need to check and then attach an explanation to the certification. The next page, execution of contract, that is filled out by Barry Hobbs, our contract officer. You don't fill that out. Your bid bond, the bid bond paperwork here has to be filled out. Of course, according to the right one for your company as well. Now, these bid documents, along with the entire proposal, the whole thing, and any addendums, put them in your envelope when you send it in for bid. I've got extra copies here with me today if you'd like to have an extra one. But you have to put the whole thing in your envelope when you're returning it. That lets us know that you've seen the whole contract. Are there any questions at all? Would either of you like to go outside and look at these beds together as a group?
I would like to walk and make sure that we can.
All right, buddy.
Let's go.
Okay, but just a couple minutes to get our stuff.
No. Okay, good. As I said before, it's pretty simple. They start at Swingate Road right down here, and they go back to the bridge. So it's right in front of our office. And bear in mind, because it's right in front of our office, we're going to see everything you do. So not that we're not inspecting anyway, but just bear in mind that we're watching everything you do. Any questions at all? If not, I appreciate your attendance. I will ask you at this point to sign out on the sheet, and we are adjourned. Any questions after today, after this moment, you will have to call Barry Hobbs at our division office for answers. Mm-hmm. Sure, help yourself.
Thank you. I got a question.
What's your question?
Okay.